Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Tuesday, November 29th, and I mean, I'm supposed to get you excited about the episode. Gotta say, we have some names on the waiver wire. Always good. Always good to be able to start the waiver wire episode off with a name that 48 hours ago, I didn't even know this person existed. We'll get to all that. But of course, because it's the waiver wire episode, that means that joining me today to help dig through the mud in hopes of finding some gold is the peasant of pickups. Yes, you've been all the way. Oh, you're not even royal anymore, Andy Behrens. You have been thrown out of the castle with the names that you have brought us here today. Andy, what's going on, buddy? Thoughts on your total demotion here by Lord Podcast?
Yeah, honestly, I'd argue the point a little bit, but the names are disgusting. I believe that every name we're going to mention today is at least an active NFL player. That's all I can really promise you. To the best of my knowledge, there are no inactive or retired players involved in this. The names are disgusting. Some of the disgusting names have had significant workloads attached to them recently, but the names are up and down the list. Absolutely disgusting. I have nothing good to say about that. I disavow all them right. All.
Well, okay, before we get into all that, a couple of things here. And first of all, Andy, I want to give you a chance off the top of the podcast, off of Josh Jacobs' monster 300 total yard game. Just take a look. Don't take a little victory lap, okay, here for a second, Andy, because I know that when people do this, I'm sure folks will come at me and be like, no, here's a tweet from another fantasy analyst. Like, look at this tweet. You surely saw, because I see everybody's tweets and I read all of your articles and listen to all your beautiful podcasts. So I'm sure there are other folks that were excited about Josh Jacobs this year. But Andy, to my knowledge, you were the only one that was like, hey, goofballs, I know he's playing in the Hall of Fame game, but let's think about reality here for a second. Josh Jacobs is good at football, and you should draft him. Andy, victory lap here for a second off Josh Jacobs.
Well, I feel like you hit the most important takeaway there, which is not even necessarily about Josh Jacobs. But at some point, I don't know what did this. Maybe preseason DFS did this. I'm not sure what did it. But at some point, we started taking we went from, like, you know, 10 years ago, preseason is nothing. Nobody's scheming for anybody. We just don't want guys getting hurt. No need to watch it. To preseason is the answer key. And if you pay close enough attention and you're listening with an ear to the ground, you'll know exactly how the entire season will play out, and you'll know exactly how everybody's used in, you know, September and October. And, like, that's bullshit too. Right? Like yeah, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. I would argue it still tilts toward the side of not paying much attention to preseason, but definitely Josh Jacobs playing in the Hall of Fame game was not a clue to anything. No. The other thing with Josh Jacobs is that, like, all roads should have led to him. Like, whether you're a, you know, hardcore game watcher, because he's been great since he came into the league. He's been a joy to watch since he came into the league. This isn't even, like, the actual production in this particular game was new, but, like, Josh Jacobs looking this good is not new. Or if you're somebody who considers yourself, like, an advanced stat bro, you should have been all over Josh Jacobs, because he's been like among the missed tackle leaders since the day he came into the NFL. He's never missed in that category. Like, in terms of everything that you care about, like, elusiveness wise, he's as good as it gets. He's, like, right there with Nick Chubb. He was right there with Javonte. Like, he's just that good. And so if you were betting on a committee this year, you were really leaning hard into a Josh McDaniels related narrative that may or may not be true. And you were leaning hard into preseason usage, which is just full of lies.
I think, you know, to play the devil's advocate, which is the wrong side, like, it's the objectively wrong take here. I think the fact that, you know, we had the declined fifth year option and the Hall of Fame game, like, those were the two pieces of bread, and then there was the meat of the sandwich there. Like, I think those two things kind of coming, you know, at either end of the off season was certainly like, if you're following the breadcrumbs, that more a lot of carbs here coming off Thanksgiving, which certainly I think we're all feeling at this point. We have had enough carbs. I don't know why I'm making a bread analogy here. But point is, like, I'll follow the breadcrumbs of it all. Like, those two things are pretty bad signs. But I think getting lost is the meat of the sandwich there, which is the player, which is like a good player that. Was the narrative that he was just going to be put into a committee was certainly completely concocted and everything like that. But I think the one thing that I come back to was people saw the Hall of Fame game was like, oh yeah, we got to ding him again. Like, we got to push. He's like, I was already like a seventh round pick. Like, he was never at any point like a third rounder or something like that. Where it's like, okay, yeah, you see a third rounder playing in the Hall of Fame game. It's like, well, yeah, you probably don't want to draft that guy, even if it ended up being like a nonsense note. But regardless, like, okay, the guy is not going to cost you very much anyways. I think all of the risk and none, obviously, of the reward was priced into his final ADP.
Yeah, I think that's really an essential point too, right? Like, all the pessimism was there and none of the obvious upside of like, what if he just continues to be the best player in this backfield and gives us another, you know, double digit touchdown season and it's just really good. And what, you know, there were, I will say that for my part, there were some assumptions about the Raiders offense that weren't right. You know, like, I thought this thing had the potential to be great, and not just great situationally, occasionally in the odd week, but great week in and week out. And it clearly hasn't been. And yet it hasn't really mattered for Jacobs. I like the one thing that I actually really feel good about with Jacobs is I had a few people reach out to me like at midseason and say, okay, I know you're a Jacobs apologist. You really like this guy, but surely I have to sell high now, right? Like, he's on a hot streak. There's no way this lasts. And I was like, no, you don't get it. He's like one of the five or six best backs in the league. This is who he is. You got to keep him. And so I hope they did because he's just legitimately this good and always has been.
Yeah, it's funny. We spend so much time in the offseason. I know I talked about this. It's like, okay, who's the mid-round wide receiver that's going to be like the Cooper Kupp style league winner that you take in, you know, in the middle of your draft, and he ends up becoming like one of the best players at the wide receiver position? I mean, there's obviously some folks you could pick at a little bit at wide receiver, but the answer was actually Josh Jacobs, right? Like, a guy who's an established good player that took a boost. And I think that's another thing too, is that the declined fifth year option, it was like immediately looked at like the only outcome there was the negative outcome, which is, oh, the team clearly hates him and they're just like not going to play him. Not like, oh, you know what? They're going to give this guy a shot to like get driven into the ground a little bit. And also he's going to take that and be like, you know what? I'm going to have my best season right now because you just made this my contract year. So yeah. I think that's another thing to remember. Although we rarely actually see like, and this is just the thing with the running backs, man. And I know we're going on about this a little bit, but I'm really not looking forward to it's already started a little bit. I'm really not looking forward to like, okay, yeah, Josh Jacobs is a free agent. I can't wait to see some team like wreck their salary cap by signing a good player like that. I know that's like the smart guy NFL thing to say, but it makes me like want to puke every single bodily organ out of my body. That like when Field Yates put out the tweet yesterday, like the 2023 free agent running back class is, you know, absolutely stacked. It's got Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders, Tony Pollard, you know, David Montgomery, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of good players, but those first four really stand out as guys that could be big time players for another team, or, you know, even stay with their current team. And the immediate reaction is, oh yeah, well, they'd be stupid to pay him because, oh my god, it makes me want to die, even if it is a little, you know, like I said, the smart guy NFL thing. So
yeah, I have already seen it, and there, like, if there's one thing that I just hate to do, it's like rooting against good players getting paid. I'm just not gonna do it.
Which is what you're doing. Like, I don't think you can separate the two. By the way, like, you know, I know it's the. Again, it's the smart guy NFL thing to say, and it probably is. Like, we have seen teams, you know, Dallas Cowboys are in a precarious situation because they paid Ezekiel Elliott as their, you know, as the centerpiece of their team. You know, we've seen obviously the Rams and the Cardinals, like those David Johnson, Todd Gurley contracts that did not age well. But I'm sorry, if you're like, yeah, no one should pay running backs, you're rooting for these guys not to get paid. It's like, oh, you know what? I really don't care if the team screw their salary cap positions. I'd much rather Josh Jacobs get rewarded for having a badass season. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yeah. I don't care if the Raiders mess up their cap situation. I don't care if the Giants mess up their cap situation, like by signing Saquon Barkley. I promise you, it says something worse in the locker room. And I think the Raiders might want to consider their mm-hmm. locker room when they look at Josh Jacobs this offseason. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point.
Look, you know, we've had some fun with Josh Jacobs here more than I wanted to. You can tell how much I really don't want to get to the waiver section, which we're going to take more time before we get to the waiver section, because we do have to talk about a few pieces of news items here. Starting off with, we talked about this a little bit with Scott last night. I mentioned it real quickly, but I just got another news alert about it, so I'm going to say it here, even though it's not on the outline. Darnell Mooney likely to undergo season-ending surgery here, Andy. Chase Claypool, the returns have been pretty meh since they traded what's probably going to be like a top 35 draft pick for old Chase Claypool there. Obviously, the biggest question is, when is Justin Fields going to get back on the field? But any bump for Chase Claypool, anybody else in the absence of Darnell Mooney, who's a really good player?
Yeah, really good player. And there had been a couple of moments during this, I don't know, whatever we want to call it, this surge from Justin Fields, this sort of renaissance from Justin Fields. They'd had some nice moments together, but there hadn't been really a signature Darnell Mooney game yet. So I don't know, you know, and the actual number of targets we're talking about here has been so low that, like, distributing those across an already sketchy receiving core, especially when we don't really know the quarterback situation going forward. We don't, like, as we speak right now, no idea who's going to start at quarterback for the Bears in week 13. It'd be great if it were Fields, but it would make all the sense in the world for them to hold him out through the bye, if not through the end of the season. I hope that's not the case. So we're talking probably about somebody who is going to be catching passes from Trevor Siemian. I'm just not, you know, this is a long way of saying that I'm not that interested in Chase Claypool. And I can't really imagine this team steadily supporting one receiver that we're just starting week in and week out. You can go ahead and play Cole Kmet. I think he's going to continue to get his chances, but that's only because he's competing at a position where it's just like a bunch of just flotsam from the waiver wire that we're not terribly interested in, right? And like Cole Kmet can just be parked as like the tight end 7 or 8 rest of season. You feel fine about it. But no, I don't think there's any big winner in the receiving room.
Yeah, that checks out to me. And it just, 2023 is going to be the Bears' year to really take the next step offensively. Like, they figured something out with Justin Fields, but you know, and obviously the rushing stuff, but to build more upon that, you know, you get Darnell Mooney back then. It's Chase Claypool's first offseason with the team. I think they still will add someone else to the picture too. I think that'll really be the year we see whatever the best version of the offense is going to be.
The thing of it is, the reason that they targeted Chase Claypool as they did and paid the price they did, and that the Packers tried to pay the price that they attempted, it's just a crummy class of free agent receivers. You mentioned the running backs. It's not that good on the receiving side. They would have to, you know, they would have to do what a bunch of smart teams did last offseason, what the Eagles did, what the Dolphins did, and go out and actually target a serious sort of game-changing, franchise-altering receiver who can uplift the offense. I hope that they do that. They have a shocking amount of money to spend in free agency. And again, not the receiving class in which to do it. But if you acquire somebody and extend them, or acquire somebody with a big contract already, like, that's what I'm hoping for.
I guess I think what made last year a unique situation too was, you know, guys like AJ Brown getting traded, and like all those wide receiver extensions, like Terry McLaurin, Debo Samuel, you know, DK Metcalf, all those guys weren't first round picks in 2019. So they didn't have that option year. And, you know, I'm thinking of the guys that are, you know, coming up for extensions for the 2020 class. A lot of those dudes do have the, you know, they were first round picks, right? Like CeeDee Lamb, first round pick, Justin Jefferson, first round pick, Brandon Ayuk, first round pick, you know, Jerry Jeudy, maybe he's a guy that is traded in the offseason, right? You know, I would say he's probably not on pace to get his fifth year option picked up at this point because of injuries and, you know, just general whatever. But yeah, so I don't know. That's a topic for another day. I'm with you, though, that I think that we're not going to get a crazy wide receiver offseason like we did last year when, like, Jacoby Myers is the best free agent wide receiver on the market. As much as I love Jacoby Myers, you know, that's why we're at the Chase Claypool thing. So we shall see. More wide receiver news here. NFL Network's Ian Rapoport reports that Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase is expected to play in week 13 against the Kansas City Chiefs. Just in time. That's a good time to get Jamar Chase back. Didn't need him to beat the Titans this past week. They will probably need him to beat the Chiefs in week 13. Does this make like Tyler Boyd droppable, who has not been like an exciting player during the absence of Jamar Chase? And by the way, was certainly not that exciting when Jamar Chase was active.
Yeah, I don't think it makes him. I don't think it makes him droppable. Like, I don't know. You'll hear the names later that we're going to talk about as potential ads, even at receiver this week, and it's not that great. I don't think you'd feel that comfortable dropping Tyler Boyd for any of them necessarily. So, I don't know that he's a drop. He's certainly not a must start, right? And this is going to have a huge impact on where we rank him. I generally have Higgins as a top 15 guy. I've pretty much always got Chase as like a top six guy. We'll see exactly what the practice reports are this week, but I can't imagine not ranking those two as basically as wide receiver ones. And that leaves, you know, only, and they throw to the running back as well. So that leaves only very little room for Tyler Boyd to do anything extraordinary. We have seen some big plays from him this year, and it's obviously an explosive offense, tremendous offense. Should be a really fun game. A lot of fun games this week. Should be a great game. So I'm not dropping him. In my mind, he's too good for that. And I do think that, you know, any injury happens to anybody else here, and it's probably good for Tyler Boyd down the road. Obviously he hasn't made a ton of noise lately, but still too good a player. Again, when you hear the names that I'm recommending, you're not going to want to drop Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, I thought about him for my hold on loosely guy, but I, you know, the fact that we have him here is just like, all right, we can just get to him now. And I agree with you that he's probably a guy you should keep on the roster. But, you know, the idea that he was going to be a big, big benefactor in the beneficiary, whatever. I feel like I mess that up all the time. But anyways, that he was going to benefit greatly from the Jamar Chase absence certainly did not come to fruition, because I do think Boyd, good player, but he should probably, I think he's a three. Like, I think he's a number three receiver.
Yeah.
You mentioned that they throw to the running backs. Burrow's throwing the running backs this year way more than he ever has at the NFL level. And even with Joe Mixon out last week, that continued to be the case. So I think it's been a nice little change up to their offense. Like, you know, the Bengals typically go out there and they say, like, hey, we have three really good receivers, two alpha receivers, and a really good slot guy. Like, we're going to run, like, our guys are better than you guys plays. You know, a lot of, like, go routes, a lot of deep middle routes, you know, like those type of plays. And I think teams are trying to take that away. So the running back stuff has been a pretty good change up for them. So I agree. I think bottom line here, Boyd should remain on rosters. Next one here, Buccaneers right tackle Tristan Wirfs is expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks with an ankle injury. My God, the curse continues. The Giselle curse continues for Tom Brady on the field here with the guys that are protecting him. No more protection spells from the witchcraft situation there. And no more guy, and guys that are supposed to be protecting Tom Brady continue to get hurt. The Bucs, dude, they lose another game. They're not, like, I don't know that they're going to make the playoffs. Like, I don't know that they're just going to win the NFC South. Damn Panthers could win that thing, which is a little hilarious. But, yeah, I don't know. Bucs offense, just not really what we're expecting at any point this year.
Yeah, brutal news. Wirf's a guy that I really like, former Iowa star, right? So I'm partial to Tristan Wirfs. Just an absolutely great player. This is not, you know, this is not a small loss. Been as you say, it's already been a tremendously disappointing season. And it's funny because at no point have I ever watched Tom Brady and said, oh, this guy's washed. Like, he's not, the ball isn't coming out of his hand the way it comes out of like Matt Ryan's hands now, right? Like,
no,
he's,
yeah.
He looks fine, which is a way of saying that there's no explanation for this except witchcraft. That's all I got. But like, you know, Godwin coming back slow and sort of ramping up to speed. And he's coming off a very good game. And I think he's coming off some really good weeks. Mike Evans might be having his worst season.
This
past week, just misfires between Brady and Evans, which is not something like, you know, overshot him on a couple of throws, which it just seemed weird, right? Like, these guys should know each other, do know each other. But Evans has had trouble with drops this year, the misconnections, just a really disappointing season from him. It's probably going to look okay when all the stats are in. But along the way, there have just been missed opportunities every week. And so the worst thing is not good for Brady. It's not good for the run game. It's not good in any way. And they're so lucky to be in the division that they're in. It's wild.
Yeah, like Rashad White had a great role on Sunday, but it's still a great role in this version of the Bucs offense, not the one we would have ideally wanted coming into the year. Next one up here, this one probably deserves like a little bit of unpacking. NFL Network's Cameron Wolf reports that Travis Etienne was cleared to return in week 12 against the Ravens from his foot injury. Doug Peterson said he, quote, didn't want to risk it. Andy, you buying this? Are you still interested in Darrell Henderson or Jamichael Hasty, who, you know, obviously, like Hasty shockingly played extremely well against the Ravens. Like, he looked great, was a big part of the offense. I think that probably says that Travis Etienne was going to have a big game against the Ravens had he not gotten injured and was extra cautious. Like, this sort of rang alarm bells to me. It was like, I'm like raising an eyebrow at this. Like, oh yeah, he was totally cleared. He would have gone back, but Doug Peterson was just being super cautious.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to react to and the thing to really take seriously is that the team made a decision not to reinsert him in the game. Not, you know, like it's fine that they're saying it's good news if you've got ETN on a roster, if you're a Jags fan, whatever. Like, this is good news. ETN himself after the game was saying that he should be good for next week. That's all great. Like, they decided not to put him back in the game, which tells you that it's something. This isn't like a cosmetic foot injury he suffered an injury in this game. It's a body part that has been a concern for Travis Etienne before, and they elected not to run him for the remainder of the game. So like that, I don't know, that's what you should care about, not what is necessarily said afterwards. And it's, you know, players being bullish on their own availability is just a thing that's always going to happen. So, we'll see if he's practicing in full on like Thursday. Great. We've got no problem. I agree with you that Hasty looked really good. I think that, you know, if there were to be a scenario where Hasty was thrown, where Etienne had to sit, Hasty's thrown into a bigger role, like he probably would run in tandem with Darrell Henderson. Like, we'd probably see them get Darrell Henderson up to speed, and there would be some sort of committee there, because Hasty's tiny, right? He's 5'8", 200 pounds. He's not like, it might work for a game. He's probably not the guy that you would just say, okay, we're going to lean on this dude throughout December and into January, and we're going to finish the season with him as our featured runner. I would imagine that you would mix in Darrell Henderson and they would form some sort of like, you know, early down, third down, hurry up sort of committee. But Hasty was great. Really, really productive game. Probably somebody that you want to throw, you know, I don't know who's got budget left at this time in the season, but if you do and you want to throw a couple bucks at him, I think that seems fine. He's clearly, there's nobody here given the situation with ETN and the fact that it sounds like it's not anything close to a worst case scenario. You're not going to want to empty the wallet for these guys.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, we'll just monitor the practice reports throughout the week. I do agree with your point that Hasty, mostly a special teamer. You know, the fact they pick up Darrell Henderson shows they want to add some more dudes to the backfield there. So those guys would probably run in tandem, I think, if we miss.
I always get uptight when I find myself about to say that some NFL player is tiny, because like you can be in the room with a tiny NFL player and you suddenly feel very small, right? Like they all have more mass than I do. I'll say that.
Well, but you're a pretty tall guy though, Andy. Obviously, from a mass standpoint, sure. By the way, did you see, I was watching the Cardinals Chargers game from beginning to end. Did you see the graphic they put up about how Herbert is the tallest quarterback and Kyler Murray is the shortest quarterback? And I was like,
the side by side,
like, okay, y'all didn't have to do Kyler like that. All right. I mean, come on. Like, you didn't have to do him like that. That was
so great. I it reminded me of Charles Robinson a few years ago when Herbert was entering the draft. I remember one of the things that Charles kept saying was that, you know, if I'm Tua's agent, if I'm anybody else's agent, there's no way that I let my guy sit next to Justin Herbert.
Yes. Keep Bryce exactly Young that. As far away from freaking Justin Herbert as possible. Like, honestly, don't even let Bryce. I mean, I know during the summer, like when Mina Kimes and Bryce Young took a picture together at some point, like during an award ceremony, people were like breaking that down heavy. Like, keep Bryce Young away from basically anybody. He's kind of, I mean, he's, it's a good thing that some of the most recent Heisman quarterback, finishers are all small, like Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. But even then, like, you don't want him standing next to Kyler and suddenly, like, is he smaller than Kyler? I mean, I don't know. But yeah, Herbert is ginormous. During the first episode of Eckler's Edge, like, I mean, that dude, like, I sat next to that dude and I was like, I don't know. I'm a pretty big guy. Like, I'm, 6'3 plus 220. Like, I got some mass. Let's just say that. And I mean, this is after, that was my pre-Thanksgiving weight. So that's another discussion. When I was next to Justin Herbert, I was like, yeah, I'm small, bro. Like, this guy's ginormous. Yeah. So yeah. I agree with you that generally when people are like, oh, you know, he's small or whatever, I'm like, okay. Well, how about look in the mirror? How about have some self-awareness?
I couldn't actually stop myself from saying it because he is literally, he's like 5'8". He's not big by NFL standards, but man, yeah, I always feel bad when I do it.
I'll make sure to go on the show tomorrow with Eckler and tell him you think he's tiny because he's
please.
He said, yeah, I think he has said it about himself from NFL standards. So I think talk about self-awareness. That guy's got some. All right. Moving on to the next thing here. Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson has officially been reinstated from his 11-game suspension. So we have to talk about Deshaun Watson again from a football angle. As messy as it is, it just, that's the deal. The Browns are 4-7. He is not coming back to, some moonwalking playoff team like I think the Browns probably would have imagined. But the offense has been good. Jacoby Brissett's been pretty good. I think all things considered, has been really good for this team. And Andy, your Amari Cooper prop, I'm still disgusted about that from FFL. I talked about it on the show with Sky yesterday. Just absolutely, I'm still pissed. I mean, I don't normally get angry about that stuff, but I'm pretty pissed about that.
I was tilting when he dropped he had a chance during regulation that was, it would have gone for at least 20 yards and it would have given me everything I needed to hit his yardage prop that we discussed in the show. And it was just absolutely hilarious that he waited until the 69th minute of the game to actually top his yardage prop. And then, you look at the box score and it's as if he topped it easily. I mean, that guy saw like a dozen targets. He was
sitting like 10 targets for 32 yards at the end of the game. And I was like, wow, what a win. But now, Andy, for those uninitiated, don't know what we're talking about, we do a prop contest. You should be watching Fantasy Football Live every Sunday morning. What the hell are you doing if you're not? We do a prop contest, and Andy is now going to have a commanding lead after that Amari Cooper nonsense. So,
yeah, just absolute nonsense. To your point about Deshaun Watson, I'm getting a lot of questions about him already, and I probably should have seen this coming. My sort of conservative knee jerk is to say, boy, if I had a another bankable option, I probably wouldn't want to roll him out in his first appearance. It is against Houston. That is a friendly
in a long
matchup.
Time too. It's not as if he didn't play at all last year. It's been since 2020 since we've seen
a really long time. Like, he's been practicing for a couple weeks, but that of course is not the same thing as game action. And it's not the same thing as having like a ton of reps under your belt with Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones and the like. But it is a really talented receiving core. The last time we saw Deshaun Watson, he was leading the NFL in passing yards and yards per attempt and yards per completion. Like, the on-field results were incredible, 30-plus touchdown passes. So we know he's great. Again, he gets Amari Cooper, he gets David Njoku. Like, that's a pretty good situation. The tough calls for me are probably going to be, I've got a super flex where I've had Deshaun on the bench and I'm like, do I sub out Derek Carr? I probably do, but I'm getting questions that involve like, hey, do I play Joe Burrow or Deshaun? I mean, you play Joe Burrow. Like, you've got a great quarterback who was just one of the clear right answers at the spot this year, I'm not messing around with Deshaun, certainly not in his return.
Look, and I, not that I think he deserves the poetic justice of it all. I'm sure he wants to come out and dunk on, you know, Houston a little bit, but do they really need him to? Have you seen the rushing stats that the Houston Texans give up? Have you seen Nick Chubb play football? Like, I think there's a pretty good chance like Nick Chubb just runs this game over, and, you know, I'm sure Watson will have a couple in his mind glory moments, but I don't know. You know, I mean, I agree with you that established dudes, even like a, you know, a Tua, like I'd play Tua for sure over go to guy like Deshaun Watson. But I think, yeah, when you get into that, like Derek Carr, Geno Smith, that sort of group of dudes, like, yeah, I think it's a question there. But I certainly am very, you know, very fascinated to see what he looks like. It's very fascinated to see what this offense looks like, because the funny thing, like when they signed Jacoby Brissett to be the placeholder, I'm like, you couldn't have picked a more like opposite dude from Deshaun Watson, because Jacoby Brissett is like, I know the term game manager gets thrown a lot for some of these guys, but Jacoby Brissett is like probably the picture perfect definition of a game manager. Like, he's going to go out and keep the offense on schedule, not going to make a lot of boneheaded decisions, just going to execute the play calls. Obviously Deshaun Watson's never really been like a, like, he's what people want Kyler Murray to be. He's what Zach Wilson dreams he is, right? Like, plays off script and does all these crazy things, but maybe the in-structure stuff is not 100% where you want it to be, but who gives a damn, because the off-script stuff is really, really, really that good with Deshaun Watson. So it will be a really interesting marriage between the two, Kevin Stefanski, that offense, and Deshaun Watson. And obviously, I mean, it's a crazy thing all the way around that we haven't seen him play in so long. And I don't know, man, I am definitely very curious to see what it all looks like.
Yeah. Brissett has really established himself now. If he wasn't before, as a premier backup, like, clearly one of the, I don't know, 35 best quarterbacks in the world, 30 best quarterbacks in the world. Maybe like he played reasonably well. He played at the high end of what anybody might've expected, over a long stretch of games too. So I do feel good for him.
In a very good situation too. I mean, this Cleveland situation is awesome. Remember, this very situation tricked people into thinking that Baker Mayfield was a good quarterback for a good calendar year. Like, so yeah, good situation. Last thing here, J.K. Dobbins returned to practice today for the Baltimore Ravens. I think he's, like, I know he's not on your waiver list, but if he's available in any waiver wires, I'm sure he got dropped in spots. Like, I would add him just because the Ravens, my God, we're going to talk about them later, but they really need help in a lot of areas. And I think Dobbins, I mean, who knows what we're going to get from the rest of the year, but I think he's a guy that you should at least add in case he's helped part of their solution there.
Oh yeah, no question about it. They leaned pretty hard on Gus in the Jackson, and Gus is fine. Gus is a good player, but he came back and they didn't exactly kick, you know, Justice Hill and Kenyon Drake to the curb, but they handed it over to Gus, and it's hard to imagine that Dobbins upon returning is not going to step into, you know, a dozen touches, and that should be good for, you know, like within an offense that wants to run and has been pretty good at it in recent seasons. This is a weird game for Baltimore, because like they moved the ball without any problem at all, and then it was the Justin Tucker show. Like, I don't know, you kick that many like 20 some yard field goals and you should probably lose.
We'll talk about the Ravens a little bit later. I'll leave it at that. Okay, time to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to recap what was a interesting Sunday night game with a lot of potential takeaways. All right, Andy, Eagles 40, Packers 33. We'll talk about the Eagles here in a second, and because they deserve a lot of discussion for the game they had against the Packers, especially on the ground game. But of course, I think we have to start with Aaron Rodgers, who was grimacing, groaning for different reasons than usual. Usually he's doing it because he's pissed off at somebody, but he was in an awful lot of pain on Sunday night. Admitted that last week he's been playing with a thumb issue, left this game with a rib injury. He sounded like, look, if we're still in mathematical, is what he said, was if we're still in mathematical contention, I want to be out there, but I don't know if he's going to be cleared to play against the Bears next week. Jordan Love, boy, Chris Collinsworth was ready to shower Jordan Love with praise. And I was like, he's thrown five passes, Chris. Like, maybe relax. But, you know, he did look pretty decent there. Had some moments, especially on the touchdown to Christian Watson, which was, you know, probably mostly Christian Watson's doing.
It was mostly Christian Watson's doing, but he's the sort of player that, like, if you can just hit him in stride, like, you can get a big play out of it, right? Yeah. And we've already seen a couple of plays where Aaron Rodgers just, like, but obviously having great touch on the ball, but Aaron Rodgers just lobbed it up to Christian Watson and came down with it. Like, that's available to you when you have an athlete like Watson. So that was really good to see. It was certainly a good cameo from Love. I don't think that they have to just, Green Bay's not technically out of it, I suppose, but they are mostly out of it, right? And so shutting down Aaron Rodgers wouldn't be the worst decision. I also completely understand his perspective on wanting to play until there's nothing to play for. Like, I get it. The thumb injury in particular really explains a lot, right? Because, like, you think back to that Detroit game and the way some of those balls were coming out of his hand. Like, we just don't see Aaron Rodgers have multiple interception games. And his whole career, he's been a guy who's willing to challenge tough corners, and he's willing to, you know, give guys a chance when they're just in man coverage and somebody's draped all over him. So, like, it's not like he doesn't put the ball at risk. He's just been his accuracy is just levels beyond where anybody else's is in the league, really. So Aaron Rodgers being on, like, he's on, I don't know what he's on pace for interception wise, but it's like 14 or 15, which is not, you know, an offensive number, but it's shocking for Aaron Rodgers because we've seen him have seasons with like 3-4 interceptions, right? It's just way out of line with anything that you might reasonably expect from him. So the thumb explains a lot. He's got a rib injury now, which is, one of those things that is not only excruciatingly painful in most circumstances, but you don't actually know what motion is going to cause the pain, right? Like, it's just a terrible thing to play through. Obviously, they can drug anybody up for any reason in the NFL, so I'm sure they can fix it. But the combination of issues, the medley of injuries that he's playing with now would certainly compromise any quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they're in such a weird place, like the Packers. There's a small chance they can get out of Rodgers' contract if they trade him, all this type of stuff. And I don't, like, it's tough to sit here and say
who they get out of it if he helped them. Like, you know,
that's what I was going to say.
It's partner.
Like, yeah. If he's cooperative, which,
yeah,
you know, I mean, have you paid attention to Aaron Rodgers last few years? I don't know. Like, I don't know that he's ready and willing to just help out the Packers with this, but you know, there's a chance they can get out of the Rodgers contract, and obviously they have to make a decision on Jordan Love whether to pick up the fifth-year option. Like, if there's a 0% chance he's starting next year, then I think there's a 0% chance they pick up that fifth-year option. But I think that if you gave Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst and the boys, like, a little bit of truth serum, Severus Snape style, if it was to slip into their morning pumpkin juice, like, I think they'd probably say they want to get a look at old Jordan Love here for a little bit. Like, I think they wouldn't mind getting him to start a couple games here in an offense that, like, the Christian Watson thing is making me feel so much better about the Packers offense, because, you know, I've been getting questions about, like, Alan Lazard, and either people are like, where's Alan Lazard? I'm like, well, he's Alan Lazard, okay? Like, you didn't want him handling all that workload. He was, like, he's a fine player, but he shouldn't be your number one receiver. I don't know that Christian Watson's ever going to be a number one receiver either, but I've made the Martavis Bryant comparison previously. I talked about it again last night. Like, those two guys, I think, are very similar in that they can flip a field like that. Like, and most of their freaky stuff comes out in the open field after the catch, like we saw with Christian Watson. And the fact that you have a guy on the offense that can do that, like, if Jordan Love has to start a few games, like you said, he's not a guy that requires, I mean, you require Christian Watson to catch a damn ball every now and again when he should, but he's not like he's a guy that requires too much. You hit him in stride on those crossing routes, and he can do a lot of the work for you.
Yeah, this is only 3 games that Christian Watson has looked this legit, and he's been great. But I have a degree of confidence now that he's not just Chase Claypool, right? Like, I guess that was sort of my fear, was that he was just going to be somebody who, you know, you could give him all the opportunities in the world, but a lot of them were just going to hit him in the hands and fall to the turf. He's had issues with drops certainly throughout the season. He's probably never going to be like a super sticky fingered, catches everything that is, you know, within 10 feet of him kind of player. But so far he looks like he's trending a little bit better than Clay. And listen, Claypool was great his rookie year as well, or at least had some great moments and showed flashes, and has never quite recaptured that. But I'm relatively confident now that Watson is going to be a better player than that. And we're not just seeing some, you know, 2-3 game eruption that is going to be as good as it ever gets. He looks pretty legit.
Yeah, agree. So if Jordan Love has a start, do you change like expectations for a guy like Christian Watson, Aaron Jones? Because my first, and that's really all we care about, by the way. Like if you're starting any other Packers player, your team's not doing so good, or you're in a very, very deep league. Those are the two only dudes do we care about. Do you change expectations much if it is Jordan Love?
I wouldn't change expectations a whole lot against the Bears because that defense is just miserable right now. Like I think he can, you know, I think he can get them to 27, 30 points against the Bears. That's probably out there. But yeah, I would change expectations for the offense as a whole beyond that game. I mean, think of the touchdown pass that Rodgers threw to Aaron Jones. Like that's pretty rare. There's just not that many guys that are completing that that would even think to throw it. It's like Mahomes and it's Aaron Rodgers and a handful of other players. It's just that sort of thing is special. So like those throws aren't going to be there, and that's not even a ding on Jordan Love. That's just like, you know, the things that an inner circle Hall of Famer can do that other guys can't. So yeah, you know, this is one of the worst protracted periods of like strings of games that we've seen from Aaron Rodgers in his career. And he's still capable of plays like that. I don't know what percentage to put on it. 75% of what the normal Packers would have been, something like that.
Wanted to hit on the Eagles here really quickly because they deserve to be talked about after such a big after a crazy offensive performance. They averaged 4.6 net yards per pass attempt. They averaged 7.4 yards per rush attempt. Like, you don't often see like a team rush for almost 3 yards more per carry than they do per pass attempt. That's
They ran for like 360 yards or something like that, right? Like a crazy total. A total that you just
net
never
rushing,
see.
Net rushing yards, 363. I mean, again, net yards passing total, 137. That is pretty insane. By the way, the Packers, their biggest weak point, this is why I talked about Miles Sanders on the show last week as a guy I really, really liked, because the Packers run defense stinks. And it's like, hello, the quarterback runs. Hello, they have a great offensive line. Like, Joe Barry, bro, what are you doing there? So, yeah, I mean, the Eagles, I think that this is what makes them such a great team in the NFL, and also not that worst fantasy team in the world, that they're so great when they can play left-handed, whether the left hand is the passing game or the left hand is a running game. I'm not even 100% sure, but when they go off this heavy rushing game script, you know, you're not going to get a bunch of big games from guys in the passing game, but like the ball literally doesn't go anywhere else except Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, and now even Quez Watkins a little bit, the Dallas Goedert turd. It's like they don't have goofballs pop up to take opportunities away.
Yeah. They're not tempted by some Jalen Reagor type or anything like that. Like, you know where the ball's going to go. You basically got, you know, I know Smith had kind of a quiet night in the box score, but still saw 9 targets. You pretty much got whatever you needed from any of the principals in Philly's offense. Shocking that the Green Bay seemed like totally blindsided by the fact that Jalen Hurts can run, like which was weird. Just really weird. Like, you don't have to spy the guy at every play, but you're probably going to do it a lot, right? And you can't just give up an entire side of the field to Jalen Hurts. I just thought it was crazy. The Packers, you know, we're going to get to the end of the NFL season and we're going to look back and we'll talk about all the things that disappointed us and all the things that surprised us and whatnot. And I've got to remember to make note of the fact that the Packers defense was garbage. And I don't know anybody who didn't think it was going to be good. Like, a lot of talent.
Were people that were excited about like them, that they were going to be good. You know, I think there were people that were expecting to take that next leap. And like, maybe there's a Joe Barry issue. I think it's certainly a coaching issue. When I watched the game with my dad last night, Jalen Hurts taking off running, my dad's like, oh, that must have been a great blocker. And then they go to the higher angle. It's like, nope, nobody's over there, Dad. Ain't nobody there. So tough scene. All right. Well, yeah, I wanted to shower the Eagles with some praise there, man, because they deserved it. But, you know, the fantasy stuff is pretty cut and dry there.
I also want to shout out the one guy on Twitter who yesterday, like during the early games, as soon as Samaje Perine scored an early touchdown, hit me up and was like, bro, I benched Samaje Perine for Miles Sanders because of you. And he was really mad. And he was getting at me. And that sort of thing generally guarantees a huge performance by the guy who hasn't played yet. So yeah. shout out to him.
Amazing. Yeah. Shout out to that guy. Thanks for playing along. All right. Let's move into the week 13 waivers. We have waited long enough, 47 minutes into the show or 45 minutes, wherever we are. Let's talk about Zonovan Knight, Andy. Let's get your running backs here. We found out during the show that Jets running back Michael Carter is considered day to day. So this Zonovan Knight character, Andy, leads your running back list.
Well, he was part of the game plan. Like, he wasn't just purely an accident of injury, right? Like, Zonovan Knight was going to play. As a series of surprises from the Jets, really, over the last week or so. One of them being that James Robinson was healthy scratched. They clearly don't see it. Like, Michael Carter's a good player, but they were never going to give Michael Carter, like, every snap in the game and every backfield touch in the game. And Zonovan Knight was going to be that guy. I don't want to oversell him. I don't think there's really any overselling Zonovan Knight. But like, I feel like because he's probably the clear target at running back this week. And because of that, I feel like there's people who are going to get really aggressive, in pursuit of him. I feel like there's people who are maybe gonna hype him beyond what has been earned. He was fine. He was facing a miserable defense. He's to my eye not a particularly inventive runner. I mean, his college, like, his nickname at NC State was Bam, right? He would like to go through you. And against the Bears, it worked a little bit, you know, always fell forward, always while being tackled, gained another couple yards, really powerful, but not, you know, just sort of paint by numbers and just not really a creator out there. I wasn't wowed by anything except for the fact that he just kept falling forward. Which is, it's a skill, but I want to be careful not to oversell him. He did finish the game with over 100 scrimmage yards. Also had a fumble, and fumbling was an issue at the college level as well. So that's not obviously something that coaches are particularly patient with. I don't know that he did anything that James Robinson couldn't have done when healthy. Right. So that's a thing. And then. You know, I think the Carter injury really allowed Ty Johnson to do a little something. And Johnson had a game as well, scored a long touchdown. Again, it's just the Bears. You don't have to get too enthusiastic here, but they're about to face the Vikings. And the Vikings are just weird. They're obviously a good team. But the defense has given up a ton of yards. The defense has been super generous, and they happen to have a bunch of takeaways, right? So, like, they've been opportunistic, but they haven't really been good. So if this backfield really is Zonovan Knight and Ty Johnson, they'll probably do okay. Like, those two together can combine for something like 130 yards, and Knight can be an interesting enough play for a week. But I don't know that this is somebody, again, we talked about this with Jamichael Hasty. I don't think this is somebody I'm going to empty the wallet for.
I don't think there are any empty the wallet candidates on your running back list, but any others that the folks should, you know, keep an eye on here. I mean,
yeah, we mentioned Hasty and Daryl Henderson at the top. They are entirely tied to Travis Etienne's availability, and it does not sound like a super serious situation for Etienne. I hope that's the case. Kyren Williams is just tied to that team is just like a theater of pain right now. So if you don't want anything to do with the Rams, I totally get it. But Kyren Williams did outsnap Cam Akers pretty severely, 38-16, played 70% of the snaps. If they get into a situation where they got to throw the ball, and that is probably where they're going to live most of the rest of the season, Williams is the guy that I would expect them to have on the field. But again, it's the Rams. They're probably going to average like 13 points a game the rest of the year. So he's not like, again, nobody on this list is an empty the wallet guy. Williams isn't either. We've discussed him many times on this show. Fun college player. And I think he's, if you have to roster a back from the Rams backfield, it's probably Williams for me. Chuba Hubbard's going into a bye, but he did see 17 carries, only got 65 yards out of it, but good usage for him. So that was interesting. Again, you can't use him this week, but perhaps beyond that. Other names that certainly need to be considered. Tyler Allgeier, if he's still available to you, and he's still out there in like 52-53% of Yahoo leagues, which is a little bit surprising to me. He's in a 50-50 committee right now with Patterson. So he's getting a lot of run. He's interesting. Jordan Mason, probably somebody who's going to step into a, I don't know if it's going to be a significant workload, but Elijah Mitchell's probably going to miss some time. He's got another knee issue. And so I think Jordan Mason is going to be somebody. Christian McCaffrey has apparently a knee issue that they're managing right now. So maybe there's a path for Jordan Mason to get like 10 touches in the Miami game, which again should be a really fun game this week. I guess I'd throw out Jerick McKinnon too as a sort of deep PPR option.
Yeah. The 49ers have Ty Davis Price, a third round pick that they took and got a little bit of action at one point this year, but then he got hurt. And it would be very Kyle Shanahan to have Jordan Mason be the guy over TDP. So, of course, just keep an eye on that situation there. Wide receivers here. This definitely there are some interesting names here. Not 100% sure that there's any like reliable dudes here. Let's get started with Zay Jones, who, as you note on the outline, has 24 targets over two games. So it feels like once a quarter, you know, like a corpo quarter, we got to talk about like Zay Jones as a dude that exists for the Jaguars.
Yeah. I mean, 24 targets in two games should just be like an automatic add, right? Like that's usage that very few people are getting. And over the last 4 weeks, he's caught something like 84, 85% of his targets, right? Like he's snatching everything. Trevor Lawrence obviously just played a signature game, an incredible game-winning drive, nailed every throw. Jones caught the 2-point conversion. Like it was just a phenomenal game from him. He caught 11 of the 14 targets, 145 yards. And this is, again, a couple games in a row with double digit targets makes a guy interesting. They're about to face Detroit. Detroit has sort of righted some of the, you know, they've maybe pulled out of the terrible defensive nosedive that they were in, and they have not been as wretched as they were early in the season, but they're still Detroit. There are still opportunities there. So I wouldn't be at all surprising if Zay Jones rest of season is like an 8 to 12 target guy. And if Trevor Lawrence is going to be this dude, if he's going to play that well, or if that's his ceiling, you know, then Jones is pretty interesting. Other names that I think are interesting, Isaiah McKenzie. And I know we've had fire drills on Isaiah McKenzie before, and then it comes to nothing. but he's coming off 10 targets, 6 catches, 96 yards, a touchdown against Detroit. I guess the thing that I'm hung up on is it's like a scene of the crime game, right? Like he's about to face the Patriots again. It was that Patriots game last year where he sort of hit the radar as a potential future fantasy asset. The one game that he stepped in for Cole Beasley, and they just immediately targeted him 12 times. He caught everything, 100 plus yards. He was great. So like that's available again this week, perhaps against the Patriots. And then maybe McKenzie goes back to just being a guy that they target 3 times and he falls down on one of those targets and it looks terrible. Because we've definitely seen that version of McKenzie this year as well. But he's tied to the right offense. So I think McKenzie's interesting. I'm going to keep banging the table for Nico Collins because the usage is there.
You and me both, buddy.
Quiet week. I get it. Just another week with like 40 plus receiving yards, but he saw 9 targets. The guy's huge. He is the sort of player who should, if anybody's going to work with Kyle Allen, I feel like it's somebody like Nico Collins. He's fast. He can leap. He's 6'4". He's just got the right.
The problem is Kyle Allen can't throw the ball past 5 yards. Like this was something like I.
But he likes to.
Yeah, but he cannot. I mean, I will never forgive Kyle Allen for, you know, like Curtis Samuel's 2019. This is what people definitely want me to do is relitigate the Curtis Samuel 2019 season. But he was absolutely set up to moonwalk to the breakout season that myself and others hoped for. And Kyle Allen was starting by week 3, okay? And that guy, I mean, remember the air yards for Curtis Samuel that year? Not converted into real yards? That was mostly the Kyle Allen season. And, I mean, Nico Collins is certainly, like, talk about got bigger bulk than a guy like Curtis Samuel. He's certainly got size on him. So, hopefully he can bring some of those passes down. But I mean, Davis Mills stinks, but I think Davis Mills might be a slightly better deep passer than old Kyle Allen, but yeah.
I forget what the number was, but Kyle Allen lost a hilarious number of yards on sacks that year. Like his worst plays were so funny. And I don't know, maybe we get Kyle Allen for the rest of the season and none of it matters. But I'm still a believer in Nico Collins' talent and his physical traits. Van Jefferson, huh? Anybody excited about Van Jefferson? I'm not really. I don't, I don't have anything great to say about the Rams offense generally, but we now know that there's no Allen Robinson for the rest of the year. Cooper Kupp still on IR. So it's like Tyler Higbee and Van Jefferson and Kyren Williams is what that offense is going to be made of. Ugh. Richie James, he scored a touchdown, saw six targets, and the targets have to go somewhere for New York. So he's out there. It's possible that the player that interests me most on this entire list, just in terms of future value, not necessarily week 13 value, but it's probably Sky Moore. He's the last guy I'll mention. This is back-to-back games with six targets for Sky Moore. Yes, some of it is a function of injuries elsewhere, but he's caught most of them, right?
He's
like
good,
another
yeah.
five catch
Had a couple
game.
Of big he's, plays called back in this
yes,
game against
yeah.
the Rams too.
Yeah, a couple of like negated by penalty. Like that line could have looked really good. That was another over that we hit on the show, by the way.
Oh, I was ready. Yeah. I was ready to be so furious if like he had those early plays called back and he went, you know, 20 yards and I didn't hit my prop and you hit your stupid Amari Cooper one
in the 70th minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Was ready to be absolutely disgusted. But yeah, no, I agree with you that Sky Moore has looked good. He's looked good.
Yeah, a guy seeing a half dozen targets from Patrick Mahomes should be on the fantasy radar. And reasonably, somebody in any 12-team league should have a use for a guy like that, for that profile. He's, you know, we're really getting into the time of year in fantasy where, like, depth doesn't mean anything anymore, right? Like, we're coming right. into the playoffs. We're, for some of you, it's already effectively the playoffs and we're really close to it. And so, like, the idea that, oh, I got to have depth at all these spots and I got to cover these buys and all that, like, all that is out the window. And everything that you want on your bench right now, you just want them to be lottery tickets where, like, if they get an totally. Opportunity, they can blow up. And that is Sky Moore.
Well, if he can ever surpass Justin Watson, what is the deal with Justin Watson, man? I mean, like, he plays a ton. He doesn't get targeted. He has like one splash play per game. He's the jumped the shark version of MVS. Like, that's literally what he is. And it's bizarre to me, but yeah, no, Sky Moore looks good when he's out there and the Chiefs just have a rotation they like. And yeah, you know, I think he's probably more of a 23 guy, but I agree with you. You should be on the radar. Yeah. By the way, Kyle Allen lost 397 yards due to sacks that year, which is notable because he led the NFL in that category and he only started 12 games for the Carolina yeah. Panthers. Would you like to guess who,
that checks
would you
out.
Like to guess, would you like to guess who number two was, in sacks lost that year?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Was it Mitch?
Oh, no. No, it was not Mitch. Mitch was 13th in the NFL in yards lost due to sacks. It was Russell Wilson. Of course.
But probably like 100 fewer yards, something like that.
Yeah, 319 for Russell Wilson in 16 yeah. games, 397 yards.
397 in 12 games is you're doing some work.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of work. Kyle Allen was 31st in QBR that year, ahead of only Mason Rudolph, who the Steelers tried to gaslight into like really being a part of their quarterback competition this offseason. Thanks for wasting all of our Earth seconds, Pittsburgh, on that. quarterbacks and tight ends here, Andy. I'm already go ahead and say it. There isn't anything interesting at tight end here. Quarterbacks, obviously, you've got Jared Goff and Mike White. Mike White, I think I'm mostly interested in just playing Jacoby Brissett and like keeping the offense on the tracks and like getting the ball to the dudes we care about there. But I mean, he's certainly this is an interesting matchup he's got coming up with Minnesota.
Yeah, fun matchup with Minnesota. And like I think we don't really even need to talk about Jared Goff because like you know what you're getting with Jared Goff. It's probably 240 yards and a couple of touchdowns, and he's just one of those guys that I always write about when his roster percentage dips below 50. Not a must add by any means. Mike White is kind of fun. Like he started four games in his NFL career and he had 400 plus yards in the first of them. And he had, you know, 300 plus yards this past week. Again, a dreadful defense, super friendly matchup, but he can just keep your offense on schedule. Like, I don't know that he has any special trait, but you know, they were like, especially the last couple of weeks with Zach Wilson, he was just failing at all the layups that they were trying yeah. to give him, right? And I thought they were setting him up for success, and they had yep. a lot of pretty simple stuff in the offense, things that should be easy to hit, and he was sailing throws, and like Mike White can hit all those. And one thing that we saw from him last year was whether it was stuff that he was checking down, whether it was just like design screens, he can hit all that stuff and he can take all the free yards. Yeah. And when we get a situation like we had in the Chicago game, when, you know, a defender falls down in the middle of the field, they've got receivers that can house it. Right. Garrett Wilson's great. He just needs a competent quarterback. He doesn't need, he doesn't need Patrick Mahomes to be productive for fantasy. Like the split for him between like when Zach Wilson is starting and when literally anybody else is starting this year is crazy. He's been like a wide receiver two, wide receiver one when it's either Flacco or White. And he's, you know, obviously been a total non-factor in fantasy when it's Zach Wilson. So
the whole offense just requires a normal quarterback. I said this to Scott yesterday on the show, and I wrote about it in Care Don't Care, the recap article I do. This offense is historically, right? Like we talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Why is he top five in EPA per play if nobody thinks he's that good? Why is Nick Mullins productive? Why is your boy CJ Beathard productive when he gets in there? It's like, well, because the offense is supposed to make life easy on the quarterback. And Zach Wilson has actively been making, you know, everybody's life worse since he got in there. So anyways. Yeah.
That Vikings game is one, like, it wouldn't be that shocking if that thing ended, I don't know, 31-24, 31-27. Both quarterbacks have decent days. Everybody that you need a fantasy contribution from goes off. I don't think that's going to be some tight, low scoring game.
No, totally not. Tight ends, you just want to go through them quick and elevator pitch. I don't know.
The guys I wrote about were, these are all guys that we've probably mentioned at some point. Foster Moreau is sort of wildly still out there in over 60% of Yahoo leagues. And I mean, we've experienced this before. Like when Darren Waller's out, Foster Moreau can be a thing. He has touchdowns in two of the last three games. Hunter Henry is coming off a game in which he scored a touchdown and I believe had one negated. Was it by replay review? I think it was. Yes. But like he's obviously a totally TD dependent player. And when he doesn't score, you're just going to get two catches for 31 yards or three catches for 33 yards or something like that. But I mean, it's a TD dependent position. So Hunter Henry is somebody who can definitely find the end zone. We saw it a lot last year. And then Jordan Akins is coming off a pretty interesting game. Not a super interesting player, and not perhaps the offense that you want to be tied to at this point. But if you're in a really deep league, he's at least somebody who might see five or six targets.
Yep, that makes sense to me. All right, let's move on to our drop candidates. You've got James Robinson here, Andy. Look, you guys not playing, you don't have him on your fantasy team. Although I'll say, Andy, any concern that like, okay, if Michael Carter misses a couple, like he misses this next game, misses a couple of weeks, like they just make James Robinson like the starting back, because teams do that sometimes.
Yeah, I like, again, I'll say that for whatever excitement is out there for Donovan Knight, like I think James Robinson can do all of that. I didn't really see anything on Sunday that I don't think James Robinson can do. So I think he's fine. But there's, I mean, if you're struggling with whether to drop someone or keep someone who was just a healthy scratch, like in a game that the team needed, right? Like I think he can be sent packing. I don't think there's any scenario where James Robinson is like a full workload guy for that team rest of season.
Yeah, I think that's just like the reality. It's they traded for him. That's great. It just hasn't really been kind of coming together there for old James Robinson in New York. I'll nominate any Raven as a drop right now, obviously outside of Mandrews. By the way, ever since I feel like Dalton and I started calling him Mandrews, he started getting hurt. So tough scene there. I think you can hold on to Gus. Obviously Lamar is a hold, but like Lamar Jackson since week four has eight total touchdowns. Absolutely absurd. Like he's not a guy that's really I think he is. If you have him, you're starting him, whatever, but he's certainly not like an elite fantasy quarterback right now. And I could hear a case that you should start Deshaun Watson this week over Lamar Jackson. I think that's viable. And then all the receivers, like I had hope for Devin Duvernay being a guy, but like, dude, they're throwing Patrick Ricard a bunch of like a screen pass on second. Their third down passing game absolutely sucks. Like Robinson's four catches in his last three games. No thanks. And DeMarcus Robinson, Duvernay, I should say, has four catches in his last three games. And then, yeah, DeMarcus Robinson, like, he has that massive game against Carolina, 9 for 9, 128 yards. And then he has one catch for 17 against the Jags. Like, you can miss me with the rest of the Ravens passing game.
Yeah, we mentioned it last week because I felt like we had to mention DeMarcus Robinson in the pickups because he was already like the most added receiver in the game. That just screamed that it was going to be the most productive game that he was going to have for maybe the rest of his career, and certainly for the rest of the season, right? Like, he's just not a guy who's going to give you 8-9 catches moving forward and you just build the entire passing game around him. That was never going to happen. I can tell you, as someone who has Lamar in a lot of leagues, this has been a rough ride. And he is definitely, like, some of them are still good team. Like, he... You know, we reached a point in the Jags game where, the passing numbers were fine, and the rushing totals were obviously great. You know, they're always great. He was over 50 yards pretty early in that game. But the absence of any touchdowns recently is really going to be a problem.
And the team is like good, and the offense is still from like a statistical perspective good, but. Yikes, man. I mean, this season, and obviously Lamar is super frustrated. So there's a lot going on there, and nothing good pretty much is the way I'd look at it with the Baltimore Ravens. So yeah, that's a team I'm about ready to get rid of in fantasy. Hold on loosely, candidates, Andy. You have the obvious one who I would have loved to put in the outline if I was a prepared person and had accessed it early. I did not. You had already claimed this player.
Yeah, I'm getting questions already about Damian Pierce. Did some radio on Monday and took two questions about whether it was time to drop Damian Pierce. I get that you're disappointed with the last 2 weeks. He has something like 15 rushing yards on 14 carries over the last seven quarters.
Carries for 16 yards, but either way, it's no more than 16 yards on the ground.
Either way, it's almost a 1-to-1 ratio of carries to yards, which is not what you're looking for. He was vultured by Dare Ogunbowale on Sunday. Not great. By the end of the game, a lost game for Houston. Obviously, they were split in series. He's still the guy who ran through and all over Philadelphia, right? Like, he's still the guy who is at or near the top of the leaderboards in all the fun elusiveness stats, right? Like, he's piling up missed tackles. He's a really good back. Is it a question of has he hit a rookie wall of some sort? Perhaps he wasn't like necessarily a high volume guy at the college level. There may be a little bit of that. Obviously, he's literally the only dangerous element of that offense. So he is certainly experiencing life as the player that defenses scheme to stop. That is an issue for him. He's got a relatively friendly matchup this week, though. He's staring down Cleveland, and like, okay, if it doesn't work against Cleveland, you can be concerned.
Yeah.
If you've got great options, you can maybe send him to the bench, but I still believe that the upside for Damian Pierce is absolutely ridiculous in any given week. I can also tell you that there is no one that we have mentioned as a pickup on this show that I would even consider adding while sending Damian Pierce to the wire. That just should not happen.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead in the concussion protocol as of Monday morning, too. Maybe I think it'd just be great if they could get him a little bit more involved in the passing game, because that's the biggest problem right now is that he gets game scripted out so fast.
Yes.
And like, they've got games like the Browns, I definitely think can blow out the Texans. And, you know, if he doesn't do it against Cleveland, like even if he has a good matchup against Cleveland, how can you possibly feel good about like throwing out a dude that has 16 rushing yards over the last 2 weeks? You cannot do that. And then. They've got games against Dallas. They've got games against Kansas City, like on the schedule left. So they've got a Titans game in there too. And like the Titans took them to the woodshed without a real NFL quarterback a couple of weeks ago. So like, it's tough if you have Damian Pierce. Like, you led you to this point, but you might want to think about finding other guys to take you the rest of the way. But I wouldn't drop him. I agree with you. I think he needs to stay on rosters. My guy's Kareem Hunt, who has done. Like, I always kind of balk at the idea of like, oh, Kareem Hunt is like a flex play in addition to having great contingent value. Well, he hasn't scored a touchdown since week 7 when he scored 2 against the Baltimore Ravens. He's not topped 45 rushing yards since that point. He has one game with just more than 2 catches, but I still think he has great contingent value. If Nick Chubb gets hurt, like, he'd be awesome to have. Like, so you got to keep him on rosters, but he's not like a, he's not a usable player. Like, he's not a flex with benefits guy. He's not like what Tony Pollard was before Tony Pollard was what he is now. He just is a guy you need to keep stashed on your roster and not hate drop because he hasn't done anything lately.
Yeah, this is what we were describing earlier about, like, just what I want my bench to be late in the season. I just want it to be lottery ticket players. And Hunt still fits that description. I can't afford for anything to happen to Nick Chubb. I got Nick Chubb everywhere.
Yeah, no, I'm not. No. I'll be screwed if that happens as well in at least one team I really, really care
Absolutely
about.
One of my favorite players. I think he might be the most dynamic runner in the league. I'm thrilled to watch. Nothing can happen to Nick Chubb or wrap him in bubble and all that. But Kareem Hunt would be in a tremendous situation if anything did happen, which, again, it can't.
A little bit of breaking news here right before we end the show. Two-time Pro Bowl running back, according to Tom Pelissero. I mean, not that is true. He is a two-time Pro Bowl running back. But according to Tom Pelissero, Melvin Gordon is expected to sign with the Chiefs practice squad. So a relatively interesting little spot for Melvin Gordon. Obviously, Isaiah Pacheco's played really well, but and then Ronald Jones got playing time, and I was like, oh, forgot about Ronald Jones. Didn't even know he was wearing number two. Wow, good for Ronald Jones. Even caught a pass there for a second. But interesting little spot for Melvin Gordon to land in. If he's on waivers, sure, I would add him. But, I mean, I don't know that he's going to have a big role. Obviously, that remains to be seen.
Probably tells us something more about CEH, and he's probably more of a threat to Ronald Jones than he is to Pacheco.
I think that's probably the right way to look at it. But just something to keep an eye on there. I don't think Melvin Gordon's like a real big needle mover. And speaking of not moving the needle, I don't have big Treviso Babes updates this week. I've said a few times the last few shows, man, you know, the Babes are starting to get, like, I mean, there were some aggressive drops, like, you know, mildly aggressive, but like Deontay Johnson got dropped, you know, like Brandon Cooks, Drake London, but like I could hear arguments for why those dudes got dropped. You know, they weren't like insane-o crazy drops. Kathy was ahead of the curve and dropped James Robinson before he was even a healthy scratch. So shout out to Kathy on that one. The only real thing I have to say is I think my mom's going to make the playoffs. Feel pretty good about that. And secondly, I think Jerry Jeudy's going to go down as the guy with the most transactions in this league. He was, as I mentioned, Leslie dropped him on the last show. Somebody's picked him up, and I'm pretty sure he's going to get dropped again. Denise picked him up, and I'm pretty sure that Denise will be dropping him this week. So,
Jerry Jeudy. Are the top seeds right now? Playoffs started today. Who would they be?
Oh, give me a second here. Well, I mean, obviously, we still have a few things to be decided by, Monday Night Football, stuff like that. But right now, the top seeded teams, do only four teams make the playoffs in this league? That can't be right. That can't be. Well, that might be.
That happens.
Okay, well, Leslie and Julie would face each other, and then Terry and Jess would face each other in two playoff games if the season started today. So,
your mom on the outside looking in.
Oh, great. Yeah, she's going to be so mad at me if that happens. Well, she's going to win this week. She blew away Terry, who was a great team, 120 points for Bev's team, thanks to her son, who told her to make sure she gets Keenan Allen in the roster and Rashad White over Damian Pierce, who she had been riding for quite some time. Looks like I will be getting a return phone call this week from my mother. So that is good to see. But yeah, we got to make sure she makes playoffs in the league, man. It's not going to be fun if she does not. So she really cares. I mean, she cares about fantasy now, which is first time ever. So we shall see. We shall see what happens the rest of the way. All right, Andy. That's all our Treviso Babes updates. That's all for the entire show. Packed show here. Big show. A lot of stuff we covered. If you want to see more great things covered, of course, you can follow Andy Behrens on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. If you don't already, what are you doing with your life? You can follow me on Twitter at MattHarmon_BYB. Our buddy Chris Harris has a new intro music for me on his show that I did this morning, and it's all boy, young boy, like, is the premise of it. Like, my God, this curse that JJ Zacharyson put on me years ago is going to haunt me for the rest of my life. But yes, I am still _BYB. And while you're there, of course, make sure you follow Yahoo Fantasy as well. You will not regret it. Austin Eckler will be back tomorrow to talk about the Chargers win over the Arizona Cardinals. Can't wait to break down that two-point conversion play with him. I mean, if he wants to, I hope he wants to, because I got a lot of thoughts. Until then, we're out.